Good afternoon. It's April 22nd, 2016, and after a near year-long hiatus, we're back with episode 5 of the Late Podcast. That's the law according to Eric, not to be mistaken with any copywritten or trademarked late broadcast like The Late Show or things like that. Here again with our fourth time in-studio guest, Dave, Crazy Dave Cheeseburger Martinez, and today we are going to talk about an extremely relevant topic in pop culture, and that is the Marvel Universe versus the DC Comics Universe.
Mostly as it pertains to the television shows and the movies and all that sort of thing. I mean, the comic books are a whole, but primarily, you know, the whole movies and television stuff.
Yeah. I agree, because Dave and I, although we both have read many of the books, I don't think there's a human being alive that's actually been able to read all of them. Ever. And nor will there ever will be. This is a constant evolving area of business for both Marvel and DC. New comics are written every day, every week, every year. New characters are developed. So we're going to focus on what you can watch now on television, Netflix, cable, and even online to an extent, and talk about some of the successes and failures of both Marvel and DC. What we hope to expect, maybe throw a few predictions out since Dave and I are basically the two most regular guys you could meet when it comes to these kinds of topics. Huh. You know, we don't do any of this for a living as it relates to these topics, the comic books and you know, good music from the 80s and bad music from the 90s or things like that. You know, so this is just, you know, our take on things, our opinion.
And the average Joe opinion on this sort of stuff. It's, yeah.
Right. So diving right in, I want to I'm going to list out a few characters, and both for DC and Marvel, and sort of point out to the four or five listeners that we have just the amazing similarities and contrasts that these two companies that are technically supposed to be rivals have. So, for example, DC has Aquaman.
Yeah.
Marvel has Namor. DC has Elektra, and according to the Google, the closest DC, Marvel has Elektra, and the closest DC rival to Elektra is Catwoman.
Okay, a bit of a stretch, I think.
Right?
A little bit of a stretch there.
But it's hard. Elektra's a pretty unique character.
No, she is, and that's kind of the point. I mean, you can draw similarities between, you know, she's a woman, and she's, you know, a sort of fighter, and maybe she's sort of a bad guy, but she does have this sort of heart of gold, and she does have this sort of pseudo-relation, just on and off again relationship with a male, you know, good superhero character. So there's parallels, but to say that those are equivalent in the way that Namor and Aquaman are equivalent, I think it's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing too is that, you know, in the DC world, you have the League of Assassins, who has trained some of, you know, the most badass people, and Ra's al Ghul's own daughter. How that's not a parallel to Elektra, I don't know how.
That seems like a stronger parallel than, say, Catwoman, but no, I agree.
Right, but, you know, you can, you know, sometimes the Google gets it wrong.
Yeah, the Google gets it right.
You know, so Marvel has Quicksilver, who has been prominently featured recently in Avengers: Age of Ultron, and you know, and also in the X-Men
First Class.
Right.
I thought he had a great scene in the First Class when Magneto first comes out of the little sort of plastic prison they put him in, and then the guard's about to shoot them, and he just starts flying around the scene and, like, manipulating.
That was awesome. He stops to, like, taste the soup as he's, like, going hyperspeed.
Yeah, just moving things. All right, anyway, go ahead.
And then, of course, DC has Flash.
Yeah.
Right. This one I don't really like very much, but it's an interesting parallel. Marvel has Jubilee.
Yeah.
And the Google has determined that the DC equivalent is Robin.
You see, this is another one of those things where, because on paper you can make certain parallels, you know, the two must be sort of equivalent. I'm like, if anybody who's at all, and again, I'm not hugely familiar with either, but anybody who's even remotely familiar with the two can say, like, no, the characters themselves are very, very different from each other. Just because there are certain external parallels that you can draw doesn't mean, like, the two are at all related. A computer would relate those two people, wouldn't
it? I guess you're right. You know, it's interesting because I wasn't an avid reader of the Batman comics.
Yeah.
You know, but I always thought Robin was kind of a bitch. You know, I'm just saying, in a lot, you know, in this, in the overall world, he was, Robin to me is like the executive's assistant that runs out and, like, gets the coffee and picks up the dry cleaning.
Fill this, intern.
Right. You know, like, I kind of just felt like that. But, you know, move on. This next one's kind of interesting. DC has Green Lantern.
Yeah.
and they're comparing it to Marvel's Silver Surfer.
I mean, there are certain cosmic parallels in the sense that they receive their powers from, I guess, whatever the cosmic energy that they call in the,
right,
each other's universes. I would say the hugest distinction, aside from their physical appearances, of
course. Is hugest a word? I'm sorry, I'm just asking.
It is now.
Okay.
It is now.
This is, you know, today.
Mark the day.
But, and today, I'm not controlling. This is a 50-50 podcast. Just so we know, this is a community property podcast. So, Dave, you have as much right to make up words as I would on any other
day. I'm just saying, write it on the calendar.
All right.
Hugest is now a word.
All right. Okay, I'm down. So, the hugest.
The biggest difference to me is that.
And now it goes back to biggest. What a
big. What, wow. What do you want me to do?
Okay, I'm sorry.
All right.
Go ahead.
One of the most compelling differences is the fact that Green Lantern was offered this sort of gift or these powers to join this sort of collective group that protects the universe against whatever. Silver Surfer, on the other hand, was compelled much more strongly. Galactus was going to destroy his home world, if I know the, you know, the mythology correctly, and he's like, well, I'll sacrifice myself to do this thing that I don't ordinarily want to do and that I don't think is good. He's basically a herald for Galactus to tell all these other worlds that he's going to kill them. It wasn't until later on that he decides to kind of like rebel and go on his own, but like the way that he got his powers was in my opinion largely involuntary, or he was sort of coerced into doing so, whereas, you know, the Green Lantern was offered a gift and offered to join a good side rather than compelled to join some evil person's side.
Right. I mean, exactly. He was invited to an extent. The ring picked him, and that led to the invitation to join the Green Lantern Corps. And he is a protector of certain sectors of the universe. And, you know, I find the parallel interesting because, you know, the Google would probably look at certain traits like the Silver Surfer's transportation method and then how Green Lantern would project himself on a bike or a surfboard and sort of cosmically glide and leave like the after trail. And that's probably more of why these two are lumped together.
The characters are sort of like intergalactic type, you know, heroes. They're not, you know, they're not bound to or to a particular planet or a particular group. They're just, they're these sort of space based sort of heroes. And so, yeah, these are the kind of parallels that machines or computers would make, not necessarily human beings would, in my opinion.
And you know what's interesting, by the way, as an aside,
yeah.
We should probably, after we wrap up today's episode, we should compress it and send it to Google and point out to them all the flaws in some of the technology they use to match these people up.
I'm sure they find it very compelling.
They may. The next one, which I find really most interesting, first of all, is Captain Marvel is a DC character.
Yeah.
I understand. But his name is Captain Marvel. Now, I may not have been alive when this was first developed, but something tells me that was like a big fuck you to somebody over at, you know, at Marvel from DC. Or maybe an artist that jumped ship or something like that.
Very possible. Right. Very possible.
There are probably people out there that actually know the origin of Captain Marvel. I just personally don't. I just thought it was interesting that one of DC's bigger characters is named Captain Marvel. And Captain Marvel was paired up against Thor. Again, don't really see it. You know, Captain Marvel, my recollection of Captain Marvel, what I've seen with Captain Marvel is he's sort of, he's got certain powers. He uses like the ionic forces in the atmosphere to sort of give him strength. That, maybe you can draw a parallel to the lightning hammer and stuff from Thor, but they're really not closely enough related to me.
Bigger parallel would be like Superman, but...
And that's interesting because that was the very next one. And I'm going to get through these quick now, but they matched up Superman with Hulk. Now, that's an easy one. Superman, of course, being DC, Hulk being Marvel. But that's an easy one to understand because with the exception of Kryptonite, they're both kind of indestructible. You know?
Yeah.
Massive strength, super strength, both of them. The ability to fly, to leap these giant distances, be it Hulk, you know, whatever. I could see where they would, you know.
I'm
sorry.
To me, strength is where the similarities end, but all right.
Well, I mean, again, sure. You've got this vertical leap ability if you really want to get technical. Just saying. The next one, which I think is really just a complete mistake, Spider-Man, Marvel, Superboy, DC. I don't know where that came from. I'm not making it
up.
Are
you sure this wasn't a glitch?
No, that's what I'm saying. We should send this to Google. Now, this one is really interesting because...
Okay.
And this is where we're going to really get into some of the depth of the podcast. DC is offering up Batman.
Uh-huh.
Marvel is offering up Captain America. Now... Here's why this is interesting, because in the soon-to-be-released Captain America Civil War,
okay,
And in following the comic storyline, Captain America almost becomes a bad guy. He becomes a bit of a renegade. Captain America's position in the books is people that are deemed superheroes, people that are protectors, the Avengers, should not be regulated, should not be monitored by the government, should not have to report to somebody. They go where the trouble is, and they fix the problem, and then they go home, or they go do the next thing. And they don't need to report to anybody. Now, this is a guy that has a military background that's already sort of going against the grain. Okay. Well, Batman has always been like that to an extent, except his loyalty lies mostly within Gotham.
Yeah.
It's his home. That's his, you know, his salvation lies within Gotham. And he has essentially taken on the role of being Gotham's dark protector from all of the criminal underworld and all of the villains. But Batman utilizes means that are not superhero friendly. He uses incredibly advanced tech, mind control tech, I mean, disabling tech. I mean, Batman basically will do and use whatever he has to. Captain America, while isn't that dark, you see a lot of the separation now from the law and order, good soldier type of mentality back to, you know, I have a job to do and I'm just going to do what I have to do to get it done because I need to protect the world. From, in Captain America's mind, probably Hydra still.
Yeah.
Or the various offshoots of Hydra that you got later in some of the books.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, and Mike, I was ready to kind of dismiss the parallels there, but I think because of how the position Captain America is going to be in these upcoming films where, he no longer feels like the best way to achieve good is to do it within the bounds of, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. or the law or all these other sort of things like Batman. I need to be sort of, I guess for lack of a better term, beyond that to affect the best kind of good. And also, too, like you mentioned, how, you know, Batman has a certain local loyalty to Gotham. I think Captain America, to a large degree, still has a certain local loyalty to the United States. And so to them, they will help, and, you know, whoever they got to. But there is still a certain primary or local loyalty to some particular city or some particular nation, I think, in both cases. You're right. I think Batman is quite a bit darker in general than Captain America, but there are certain less obvious parallels that can be drawn. So, yeah, okay, I can get behind that.
All right, and then the last couple that I think they're just sort of throwaways. Marvel has Wolverine, and the Google has offered up Lobo for DC. Well, Lobo was not a prominent character.
Are we talking Sheriff Lobo?
No, I know. Yeah, I remember that show too. You want to sing the Catch song?
No.
He's our Sheriff Lobo. Mighty Sheriff Lobo. You're not no, Lobo quite literally in Spanish means wolf.
Yep.
And Wolverine. All right, so you understand this very well also may be a Google glitch, but Lobo was also sort of a DC bitch. He was never a big, you know, muckety muck.
Yeah.
The last one, well, there's actually two more. One is a very, very
maybe the easy two. The fact make. The two were all, I think, a bit more loner type characters.
Yeah, maybe the Lone Wolf and Wolverine, but
whatever. Okay,
you know, I mean, Wolverine, I think, in the Marvel universe,
plays. I don't think that's the worst parallel that's on this list.
Well, no, that's probably true, but Wolverine in the Marvel universe is certainly a much more prominent character than Lobo was in the DC world.
Absolutely,
just
absolutely hands down. I mean, of course.
So the next one, which is actually the most easy to make, and that's Ant-Man and the Atom.
Oh. Okay, so. That's one of those examples of, and I don't know if it was you who showed me this or somebody else, but all these parallel characters, you know, between, you know, DC and Marvel, and how many characters are essentially one ripping off the other person.
Well, damn near the same. Flash and Quicksilver, they're not a whole lot of difference.
No, exactly. That's another one of these huge ones where, and I think in most cases, DC did it first, and then Marvel kind of, you know, sort of copied afterward. But yeah, no, that one was one of these, like, really gross and obvious, like, dude, really?
It's probably a good example, too, of what you're bringing up now is how Marvel seems to have the edge creatively-wise, you know, in the creativity department over DC. Mm-hmm. And then, and so it got me thinking, just now when you were mentioning that, like, this is probably something Marvel came up with first, and, you know, DC just sort of jumped on their coattails. But, like, DC's obviously biggest iconic superhero, the merchandise mover, all right, is Superman.
Yep.
Okay. But how much creativity went into putting the word super and the word man together and then coming up with basic shit like, well, he can fly and he's got X-ray vision. I mean, this is not, you know, there was nothing super special about creating the Superman character. His background, I think, became creative. And I think ultimately it was developed into a very interesting backstory, mm-hmm. being, you know, the son of Jor-El and all the things that went on in his home planet. But the original concept of just, you know, a superhero that could fly, you know, stop bullets with his teeth and that kind of thing,
yeah.
faster than a locomotive, I don't think that took a whole lot of creative genius.
No, I agree. And I think as far as just that kind of raw creativity, there was a lot. Stan Lee and his commitment to trying to figure out new and interesting ways. I remember him talking years back about like why how he came up with the X-Men. The whole idea of mutants was that he's like every superhero was gamma rays or radiation or some. There was always the same causes over and over again as far as how these guys got some special powers, and you know they were largely the same. And so for him, it was like, well, what if they were just born that? What if there was some genetic defects or whatever that caused them to have this sort of thing? And I think consistently throughout all these characters that were invented by, you know, Stan Lee and I think Jack Kirby, I think is the other guy.
I think you're right.
Yeah. There was this commitment to trying to like have new and interesting ways in which somebody could have become extraordinary in this in a very sort of comic book fashion.
Absolutely. I definitely think that Stan Lee and the... some of the characters that Marvel created, it even goes beyond the origin of the character, you know, where Stan Lee would say, well, yeah, what if they were just born that way, right? Or what if there was some other type of event mm-hmm. that occurred even in some other universe
yeah.
that somehow affected a person here? They, you know, Marvel has always, in my opinion, done an incredibly good job of really giving you an entire character bio.
Yeah.
They go all the way back, and they have been able to tie things in on these crossover books. And we're yeah. gonna, you know, and this is gonna be a good segue to this idea of crossing characters over in different television or movies that are out there. But Marvel has always had such an amazingly good presentation of an overall character biography from start to finish.
Yeah,
and everything through and. It's never just thrown out there like some jumbled, half-assed idea that they just had to put something there. So, okay, well, let's just say he's, you know, he's got, you know, Centaur DNA somehow. And, you know, just,
yeah.
you know, they came up with reasons why events, you know, that would trigger the onset of a power or a curse in some characters' cases, depending on how you look at it and who they are. You yeah. look at some of the other, even some of the villains, like the Marvel villains, like Mephisto. Or, you know, some of these other, you know, I mean, it's just the deepened story. And you look at guys that are, you know, it's interesting because Dave and I started this conversation at lunch and we just decided to bring it back and throw a podcast out.
Yeah.
But even some of the characters that are quote unquote regular guys that just had shit happen to them. I mean, look at the character of, you know, look at Deadpool, right? Yeah. Deadpool was just, he was a soldier. He was a regular guy. Mm-hmm. And he went through Wolverine. Well, Wolverine actually had the healing mutation.
Yeah.
And the inability to age.
Yeah, he was born that way.
Right. So that's a bad example. I take that back. Let's cross now into modernly what's going on, right? When regular guys today flip on the TV, channels, local channels, 5, 11, 7, whatever it yeah. is, at least once or twice a week, there are one-hour dramas centered around some of these comic books and these characters. So DC, up until about a year and a half ago, DC had the monopoly on television, and I still think to this day Marvel is way, way ahead of DC cinematically, you know, as far as the big screen.
Unquestionably.
I mean, just,
unquestionably.
They are light years ahead, literally in a different universe.
Huh? I saw what you did there.
Thank you. Self high five. But if you look at television or the small screen, DC currently has Gotham
yeah.
running.
Mm-hmm.
They have Flash.
Yeah.
Arrow.
Yeah.
And they have another show, which I actually, out of all of those, this is the one that I watch the most from DC, is DC Legends of Tomorrow.
Okay.
Very good show.
Okay.
And that, that has the Atom. And a few other characters, you know, one trained by the League of Assassins. So I enjoy that show. Marvel, of course, has Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Marvel had a few miniseries spinoffs like Agent Carter.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really until Netflix took the gamble, right? Netflix essentially, you know, I'm paraphrasing because obviously I'm not part of Netflix, nor do I work at their board of directors or anything. But
this is not necessarily an endorsement of Netflix.
Well, you're right. But if it were, I would say get Netflix. It's worth it just for these shows. But, you know, it's somebody at Netflix said, you know what? We have the freedom not only to produce our own content, which they've done successfully with House of Cards and, you know, some of the other Netflix originals.
Yeah.
But Netflix is not restricted by the regular commercial broadcast standards that free television has.
Oh, yeah.
So Netflix partnered up with Marvel or some division of Marvel.
Yeah.
And put out Jessica Jones, Daredevil. You have Luke Cage coming out with his own series. You have the Defenders coming out with their own series. You have Iron Fist getting his own series. Mm-hmm. So Netflix really went all in, you know, on this comic book genre and has done. Daredevil finished already its second season. Jessica Jones is renewed. It finished its first season, aired, and of course Netflix is on demand. You can see it whenever you want, but and it got picked up for another season. Mm-hmm. Coming up is Luke Cage. They already showed the trailer for Luke Cage at the finale of the Daredevil. Season 2 final episode, you caught a glimpse of the Luke Cage trailer.
Yeah.
Right. So these shows are going in full force. These characters are introduced in prior episodes or different series. So Luke Cage obviously was introduced in Jessica Jones. Now, in the books, Luke Cage and Jessica Jones actually have a romantic relationship.
Mm.
And you know, they're a couple, or they were for a while, and they're on again, off again, I suppose, like a lot of couples are.
Yeah.
But,
you know, but every celebrity couple.
Right. So it didn't really surprise me to see Luke Cage appear in the Jessica Jones series. But keeping in mind this whole idea of crossing over and mixing and, you know,
creating a universe rather than a series of individual shows.
Right. So midway through the second season of Daredevil, Foggy has lunch with Hogarth, who is the big shot muckety muck lawyer in Jessica Jones, who, you know, slashes her partner up, or they, you know, they get into some big heated fight or what, you know, if you haven't seen it, well, there's nobody that listens to this. No spoilers, but they, you know, and, you know, so the only thing that gets confusing to me is, you know, I always find myself wondering at what point in time is this new reference being made?
Mm-hmm.
So when Foggy has lunch with Hogarth looks fine. She doesn't look like she's scarred up. It doesn't look like she's had this big battle yet. It doesn't look like her partner was mind-controlled by Kilgrave and told to cut her 1,000 times until she died. So did this happen before, you know, or are we so many years past that now and Hogarth is all healed up and had plastic surgery? You know, I don't know. So that's what confuses me sometimes about the crossing over.
Yeah, the timelines. How do they line up?
Yeah, what point in time? I mean, I can tell you that there was a lot of crossover between Arrow and The Flash.
Yeah,
you know,
but those were very obvious timelines.
Because everything centers around Central City and the neighboring town, which now I can't remember, but they're literally like blocks apart in a way.
My thinking, honestly, and this may be just an overly simple, you know, thing as far as the Hogarth thing is concerned. At the end of the day, like, I'm not sure how much she got cut up on her face, but she's wearing a big giant coat in this one very quick and solitary scene. It really could be that she is all cut up, but just nowhere obvious. In that one scene. I mean, that might be an overly simple answer, but...
No, actually, I think that's a great answer because...
Because I think the timelines are going to be fairly parallel to each other, just like they are with Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and all the movies that happen.
That's a great point because, you know, Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has thrown out Avenger references and...
They go out of their way to show that our time frame, our timeline... mirrors the movie timelines by the references they throw out. Oh, then this thing happened in DC. Oh, and this other thing has happened in New York. You know, they make it very clear that our timeline matches the movie timelines, and I'm willing to bet that they're probably going to try to do that with the Netflix series as well.
I hope so. I mean, I am so looking forward to Iron Fist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm.
I was never, I'll be honest, I was never really that familiar with that character.
You know, but let me tell you, he's the kind of, I don't even think you have to be a fan of the particular character, because the way Netflix is doing these series and the way they're allowing them to be presented.
Oh, and I had no idea who Jessica Jones was either, but yeah.
But the dope show. I love Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
You know, and Kilgrave, what an amazingly portrayed character. Yeah.
That whole idea of a character that mind controls people is not a unique idea, but I thought the way that they did it, the way they executed it, not only just in all the creative ways in which he used his power and how he, this was basically this way in which he skated through life, but also the way that they focus on the people who he had done this to, and just the awful and wild and just terrifying things that he made them do, and how they were coping with this idea that, like, I did this. I mean, it really wasn't me. And I guess nobody's going to hold, and no one who believes in this guy, Kilgrave, is going to hold me responsible, but I still can't, I did that horrible thing. And the way they sort of portrayed that idea of a mind control character, not only how he would live out his life, but also the effect that he would have on the people around him, I thought was excellent.
I think so too. Very, very well done. Incredible portrayal. Just amazing.
Yeah.
I can tell you that, well, I don't know, how do I say this? You know, I'm just going to put you on the spot. Okay? I'm just going to put you on the spot.
All right.
Gonna, if you could pick, if you could be one villain,
yeah.
Okay, would you be Kilgrave or Fisk or Kingpin?
Kilgrave.
See, I was going to say Kilgrave too because of the whole mind control thing.
But
something I just feel like Kingpin could like outpower the mind control because he's like Kingpin can outpower anything.
You know what? That will, the idea of having a will that could eventually overcome that, just like Jessica Jones eventually does in that series, I agree. And as soon as I uttered it, I think the immediate and obvious answer is Kilgrave, because anything Kingpin can get by force, Kilgrave can get so much easier. But at the same time, I think Kingpin still has much more of a chance at having a normal life. There was that one part in the Jessica Jones series where he says, like, and I think it's an honest lament, I never know. I have no real relationships. I never know if somebody's doing something because they actually want to, because we're friends or whatever, or just because my powers are working. Like, it's a completely isolating sort of power. I can make everyone do what I want, but I can never really have a real relationship or friendship with someone. Whereas with, at least with Kingpin, that's still on the table. He can still have real relationships like he does with that one woman. It's not everyone's just a puppet around him.
Right. And what an amazing scene that was in Daredevil when Matt Murdock goes to visit Kingpin in jail.
Right? I already know what you're doing. Yeah.
And we just, watching Kingpin, you know, it's an amazingly good portrayal by Vincent D'Onofrio, mm-hmm. of the Kingpin, because watching him sort of go from this very manipulative, controlled, you know, intellectual being to
an animal,
just an absolute raving baboon. You know, he even the way he fights, it's like he becomes a 3-year-old.
Yeah,
Yeah,
he doesn't like punch someone like a boxer or a martial artist. He clubs them with his arms like an ape or like a child. Like,
yeah,
you mentioned. Yeah,
just, you know, becomes this unstoppable, immovable force. You know, unstoppable object.
Yeah.
but while maintaining this, you know, superior intellect and this incredible sort of ability to foresee and manipulate. Just like what he did to Punisher in the second, you know, in Daredevil season 2, mm-hmm. where he sort of set Punisher up, and when Punisher didn't die, he just later said, well, you know, I would have preferred if you would have, but...
But since we're here, we now have opportunities.
Right.
Yeah.
And just like a cold calculating businessman, just went right for the, you know...
Yeah, didn't have that like scared apprehension about like, oh, wow, right. I tried to kill you. Like, yeah, I did, but since that didn't work... Now you and I have an opportunity,
right.
So let's make the best
right.
of this.
Guess I owe you one.
Yeah.
Right? That kind of
feels, not even that. It was just like, well, now you and I can make the best of this situation. Like, I need something from you. You need something from me. So let's just make this happen.
So funny, too, because imagine if the shoe was on the other foot and somebody had tried to take out Kingpin and failed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kingpin wouldn't have that. Well, you tried. You failed. I understand. But there's still business to be done.
Yeah.
So let's, you know, no. Kingpin in the books... And I think we're going to see more and more, because I think Kingpin is going to be a regular character in Netflix, in the Daredevil
of
Netflix
course.
For as long
yeah.
as it goes.
Yeah.
But in the books, Kingpin was an extremely vengeful character. You know, he didn't just let shit slide off his back.
Well, you saw that even in the first season here. Like, he can, when he's in control and when he's confident and in control, yes, he can be that, you know, detached, objective, you know, business-like type person. But as soon as, like, he's offended... or hurt or otherwise take, no, he becomes that animal again, and he exacts revenge in that sort of way.
It's pretty, I mean, I really, really enjoyed Daredevil.
Yeah.
Both seasons. Really enjoyed Jessica Jones. We're gonna keep today short. Again, this is just sort of our jump back into the podcast seat sort of thing. It's been almost a year since we've actually done one. Let's talk about some of the upcoming movies.
Yeah.
You know, we had about a month ago, Batman versus Superman.
Oof.
Yeah, a lot of people, in fact, and I'm one of them, I saw it the not opening night, but like the next morning.
Yeah.
You know, it took the kids. Everybody was very excited to see it. And I left feeling very disappointed.
This was supposed to be DC's big shot at achieving what Marvel's been achieving for the past several years now. And unfortunately, it just... Can I make one observation about this? I was thinking about this as you and I were talking about why DC has not been able to really gain any real traction on this versus why Marvel seems to have been able to.
Yeah, by all means.
It occurred to me when you were talking earlier about how great Marvel has always been at interconnecting characters and interconnecting storylines and interweaving this whole universe together. Whereas I feel like DC's strength has always been in having individual storylines and individual characters and whatnot. The best DC movies have always been like the ones that where it was just, we're going to focus solely and solitarily on this, if that's a word still, I don't know. On this, before you jump in there, on just Batman, on just Superman, not like we're going to have this whole crazy interwoven universe. I think that the culture of the two comic of these two comic book giants lends itself to Marvel just naturally being better at weaving a whole universe of all these interconnected people versus DC having a more serious and solemn and solitary focus on just one single character and one single movie. I don't know.
Well, I agree. I think that first going back, you know, to the, you know, late 70s, early 80s when you would have the one or two sort of movies come out, but they weren't cinematic blockbusters like today.
Yeah.
Right? But yeah, the original Superman with Christopher Reeve, or it may not even have been the original, just the oldest one I can remember.
Yeah.
And those were terrible movies. And they had Supermans 1, 2, 3, and 4. And, you know, they were terrible. And then they just sort of put it on the shelf for a while. You had a Punisher movie come out with Dolph Lundgren at one point. Mm. That really sucked.
Yeah.
You know, there are certainly... Marvel had its fair share of failures. You know, the first Green Lantern movie with Ryan Reynolds was really bad. That wasn't even the first one, I don't think. It was like a revamp, but that was like terrible. But I think that some of DC's best work was the Dark Knight series when Christian Bale was playing Batman.
Fantastic.
Right? Those were great. And I think I agree. I think they dropped the ball. I think they wanted to shoot for the stars, or they wanted to be more like Marvel cinematically, you know, on the big screen.
Yeah.
And their Batman versus Superman was the attempt to bring these two iconic figures together.
Yeah. And start building on that whole universe.
Yeah. And to be frank, the best part of the movie, in my opinion, besides some of the newer tech that Batman had, was Wonder Woman. And that's only because there still remained a bit of mystery around her. They tried and unsuccessfully, in my opinion, tried to do some of the crossover to the current DC TV products.
Yeah.
So you had a flash of the Flash, if you will. You know, pardon me. They showed you a still of Aquaman, which is, my understanding, going to be its own feature film. But the Marvel movies, you know, it's amazing because you look at Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people did not think Ant-Man was going to be as good as it was.
Yeah, like Paul Rudd as a superhero? What are you thinking?
Right. And, you know, about 12 minutes into the movie, I was already completely into the Marvel everything.
Yeah,
I was
you're
so
in.
Excited with it. But they also, in Ant-Man, they had scenes where he would go to the Avengers base.
Yeah.
He needed to steal some old tech. They cross that over. Now, of course, Ant-Man is going to be in Civil War, yeah. Right? So they did that in a very subtle, cool way, and they tied Pym Technologies back, which they do in the books. Pym and Stark are rivals,
yep.
Right? So an amazing way that they throw this all together. And Marvel, again, they just have the absolute skill and creativity to do that. And look at even the crossover, like things like Guardians of the Galaxy, which is another one that I didn't think was going to be as good as it was. You know, I was not excited to see Guardians. And if my, at the time, 7-year-old son didn't really beg me to go see it. But then I saw it like 3 more times after that. I thought it was so good. So now, of course, we have Civil War, Captain America Civil War coming up.
Yeah.
Right? The theme of Civil War has in the books at least, is again what we alluded to earlier, where it's sort of this, there's a separation of culture, if you will, between the Avengers and those that have assembled to become part of the Avengers alliance, Avengers Initiative.
Yeah.
And there's one part that's sort of led by Tony Stark, who, of course, Iron Man is sort of the natural leader on one end anyway and takes that role. and they believe in monitoring and following protocol and so on.
Yeah.
A lot of it is because Tony Stark blames himself for the creation of Ultron and the fact that he's been allowed to be so freewheeling.
Yeah, right? His own personal experiences with himself has shown that is dangerous. There needs to be more oversight for people that have kind of, you know, power. I mean, it's a much, you know, you can take this in much larger and bigger and broader sort of ways, but that no people or no small group of people should be allowed to have that kind of power and autonomy unchecked versus like what you mentioned earlier, Captain America, on the other hand, he's coming from a position like, no, I've been under power and authority and checked, and I found that it is often corrupt and wrong and bad, and I feel like the best way I can achieve good is to be on my own. And it makes a lot of sense why these two people would take these very distinct, not just like, I can see your point, but very firm stances on this subject.
Well, and it's interesting also because the people that tend to align, and of course I'm only referring to the trailers I've seen.
Of course.
Right? But the people
we don't get those early passes yet?
No,
The podcast isn't big enough for that?
No, not yes. I've not yet.
Stan didn't give you a call?
No, I'm not. Apparently I'm not on that list. I don't get the advanced copies of these movies. But pursuant to the trailers, there seems to be a very logical split in that, of course, on teaming with Team Cap, mm-hmm. you've got Black Widow, who also was subject to the oversight and under the thumb of whomever she was trained by initially.
Used to be, yeah,
girl,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So she kind of, and of course, she, the whole nature and character of Black Widow is very much where she operates on her own outside of the boundaries.
Anyway.
She takes her mission, goes and does what she has to do, and then reports back that she's done,
mm-hmm.
right? The whole keeping my ledger clean and I don't want red in my ledger, I mean, that's very much this idea that I don't want to owe anything to anybody, I don't want to report to anybody, and if I owe you a debt, I pay it back as quickly as I can because I don't ever want you to have to call me out on something.
Yeah, because you know, that's a kind of power I do not want to give to anybody.
Right, so it makes sense that Black Widow is on Team Cap. Of course, Bucky, Winter Soldier, right? That makes sense.
There's just loyalty there.
Right.
Yeah.
Ant-Man seems to be on Team Cap.
And again, he...
And Falcon, right? Which makes sense, too, since he was also a soldier. And, you know, he helped Captain America in the prior movie, Captain America Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
So, and now you have Team Stark, or, you know, Team Iron. Very, very cool addition is the Black Panther.
So I don't know how. I mean, obviously he hasn't been in any of the other movies up until now. So it's interesting to see what they're going to do with this character here.
Yeah, and I know according again to the Google that Black Panther.
I love how you keep calling it the Google.
Well, it deserves a degree of respect at this point, right? I mean, it's probably used more times a day than any one thing in the world combined. I mean, who knows?
Fair enough.
So according to the Google, the Black Panther gets his own movie in 2019.
I'm assuming if they're introducing him as a character, as a prominent character in this, I don't doubt he's going to get a movie.
Yeah. Well, apparently it's already signed. It's already a done deal.
Yeah.
So you've got, and of course you've got Iron Patriot or War Machine.
Yeah, yeah. But again,
that's loyalty and friendship to Tony.
It's loyalty and friendship, but also he's a soldier.
Captain America, but Captain America was an active soldier at a different time. You know?
Well, no, but not only that, but he consistently, that, I mean, I think it still follows through, like in that third Captain America movie, second or third one, I forget which one it was, he was the one who was trying to check Tony Stark. No, you're way too autonomous. You have way too much of your own thing, and that's a bad thing. And now that Tony is kind of agreeing with him, yeah, I mean, War Machine has always had that stance. Like, no, people like you, people like us need oversight. And I think I'm just saying that there's a certain continuity with him still holding that same stance here.
Yeah, I agree. So it's going to be, you know, interesting. And of course, in the last trailer that they finally showed, I think it was at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Spider-Man makes an appearance.
Oh,
now.
Yeah.
Apparently, he's on Team Iron Man.
Which, okay, that's
Stark.
That's a surprise, but we'll see what they do with that.
Well, we're not sure yet. But what was cool, and again, you have to kind of be a bit of a nerd to know this, but the Spider-Man with the mechanical robot eyes that they showed in the trailer, that happens later in the books, you know, where he's sort of crafted around, and that's because of a friendship with Tony Stark, and Tony Stark actually designs this mask for him, you know, with some of the Iron Man component type things in it.
I was not aware of that.
So it looks like that's the type of thing he was using, and maybe that's how they got together.
And maybe that's where the loyalty comes in.
Yeah. So very exciting times for anybody who's been into comic books or the graphic novels. You know, Dave and I, so, you know, again, the audience knows, these are the same discussions we had 15 years ago about Sin City or other types of movies that were based either on, or The Watchmen.
Yeah.
You know, I guess we've always sort of had this in common, you know, an interest in these types of books or comics or graphic novels.
Yeah.
And so it time really goes by for me, and I hopefully for Dave, when we talk about topics like this where both of us are sort of in agreement, you know, we're not, again, comparing the incredibly good music of my era to the terribly disappointing music of Dave's era. But having said that, so we're at the 40-minute mark. Dave has to go.
Yeah.
He gave me a look a few times. So we're going to wrap it up for this episode. And for everyone that's kind of hung in there and that's kept subscribing, I appreciate it. In the coming weeks, there are going to be some new episodes back to the topics of law. We're going to talk about the change in the absolute priority rule as it relates to individual Chapter 11 cases. And I'm going to also do a podcast towards the middle of June, right before I embark again on my annual trip to the World Series of Poker. So looking forward to our next couple of podcasts. And again, I want to thank Crazy Dave Martinez for stopping in and helping me out.
My pleasure, Eric. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Take care, everyone, and talk to you next time.
Bye.